Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5. This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that any opinion expressed on the air is not reflective of KX93.5, its management, or its board of directors.
And good morning, Laguna Beach and all of our listeners, and welcome to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist. And every Sunday morning, live at 8 a.m., I hope to just provide you with some more information about living your best life, living a life filled with some joy, some peace, and some happiness, because that can be fleeting sometimes. So today we're going to continue to talk, about what it means to live a real life, what it means when you fall down, and how to get back up. Because the truth is that all of us suffer. We all have pain. We all have failure and loss. And we talk a lot, or we hear a lot about, okay, so I had this story and here's where I fell. And then, you know, blink, blink, blink. And here's where I rose and found something different, a different career, a different partner, a different sense of myself. But we often don't talk about the process, the middle part, the yucky part, the part that got us out of the darkness and into the light. And so I'm going to share a resource today that is probably my very favorite self-help book, I guess if you want to call it, of all time. And if you read no other book, in my mind, this book is the one that I feel is truly life-changing. Now, it's just my opinion, but I do read a lot of books in the mainstream culture so that I can decide what is appropriate to refer to people or not at work. And this one really changed my life. And in fact, as I was sitting in what I needed to talk about today, I think I needed it for myself too. And so it's sort of reemerged. So we're gonna talk about that in just a minute. But before I do, I want to remind everyone about some just awesomeness with our radio station, which is please, please, please come out and support us at our KX93.5 Xmas holiday party, where Nancy Wilson of Heart is going to be playing on December 8th. She's going to be joined by her band, Roadcase Royale, with openers La Sera and Gothic Tropic. This is our only annual concert, and it's going to be held at the beautiful Irvine Bowl, which is home of the Pageant of the Masters. And when Nancy's there, she's going to play all of the Heart classics, including some new originals with Roadcase Royale. All tickets include a reserved seat and admission to our Winter Wonderland in the Festival of Arts grounds, where we're going to have craft food and drink, a Santa Claus photo station, and an amazing auction. There are still VIP and meet and greet opportunities if you want to check that out. And all proceeds benefit KX93.5, where we just try to keep independent radio alive and well in Laguna Beach. This station, I think, is such an incredible resource. Our community is so blessed to have it. So please, please come out and support us. I'll be there with my kids. We'll be volunteering, and hopefully all of us who are here at the station will be there. And we'd love to see you. And also on that note, we've got some great sponsors. Just want to acknowledge the people and companies that have also helped us out, which is the Honaker Family and the Hive, Wealthwise Financial, Cox Communications, the Laguna Beach Beer Company, Libre Tequila, Tito's Handmade Vodka, Stu News Laguna, and Village Television. Okay. That's our little bit of business this morning. Now we're going to return, as I was saying, to Moody with Dr. Sage, where we're going to explore every week, hopefully, something to do with our moods, our minds, and our real lives. And I know I talk about her a lot, but she really is one of my most favorite people, Brené Brown, Dr. Brené Brown. And she's a shame researcher, as you will say, or she says, I guess. And so you can imagine what that job looks like. But she's written some amazing books. She has some new books out, actually a new book that came out at the beginning of October. But my favorite two books, actually there are really three, but the two I refer the most are called Daring Greatly and Rising Strong. And the other one is called The Gifts of Imperfection. But my very favorite one thus far is Rising Strong, because it's all about falling down in life and getting back up. How do we do that? And as I said before, the little bit of news about our holiday party, it's that middle part, that part where we fell down and hopefully we found a way out. But what do we do with the middle? And what helps us go and transcend from pain, from failure, from hurt and wound into thriving or being able to get back up? Her research really supports the idea that it is this the concept of being vulnerable, that letting ourselves be vulnerable is the best measure of courage. And what this really means is that we are showing up in life with a willingness to be seen. We're showing up and showing who we are. And that is not always an easy thing to do. So I'm going to play, as I do often, a little interview with Oprah on Super Soul Sunday about this idea of what Brené talks about. And there are really three main concepts, which I will also come back and talk a little more about. But they really are the reckoning, the rumbling, and the revolution in our lives. And so I'm going to give you a little taste of what that's about. But I highly encourage you to read, whether it's through Audible or on your own, Rising Strong by Brené Brown. It really is my most favorite self-help book of all time, because it really opens up the door about what it means to be human and what it means to struggle and what we can do about it. So here you go.
Failure, disappointment, heartbreak. These moments can expand our souls if we're willing to face our real truths. Tonight, Super Soul Sensation, Dr. Brené Brown, is back.
Doing great.
She's here to teach us how to transcend our failures.
It can revolutionize the way you live, the way you love, the way you lead.
Super Soulers, get ready to rise strong with Brené Brown. This book is like it was written, Rising Strong, great title, by the way.
Thank you.
Is like it was written for our audience, because you actually believe that the ability to rise and rise strongly is a spiritual practice.
I do. You know, when I talk about spirituality, one of the definitions I put forward in my work is that spirituality is this deeply held belief that we're inextricably connected to each other by something greater than us. And that something greater is rooted in love and belonging. Some of us, I call that God. Some people call it nature, the universe, the source, the higher power. And so to me, it's about the big key piece is that inextricably connected. Mm-hmm. Like, we will never be able to free ourselves from suffering till we're all free from suffering, which makes it our job to do something about it.
That's a tweetable. We will never be able to be free from suffering until we're all free.
We're all free.
Because we're all tied
to each other.
I don't think people really fully get that, though. I mean, I've been saying that for all the years that I've been talking on television, on radio, in magazines, but I don't think we understand how we are. Can you actually explain that? How are we all tied?
I think it goes back to the spirituality. I think we are all tied together because our humanness brings us together. So if there is suffering in the Middle East, if there's suffering in Africa, if there's suffering in Asia, my freedom, my humanity is tied to that suffering. So to pretend like my only concern is what's right in front of me makes irrelevant our shared humanity.
Vulnerability is not weakness. Vulnerability is our most accurate measurement of courage.
With her pioneering research on vulnerability, shame, courage, and worthiness, social scientist Dr. Brené Brown has sparked a global conversation.
If we're going to find our way back to each other, we have to understand and know empathy, because empathy is the antidote to shame.
Her 2010 TEDx talk remains a viral phenomenon with more than 21 million views. She's also a Super Soul superstar.
Damn, that is good.
I think shame is lethal, and I think we are swimming in it deep.
Her message resonated with so many of us. Brené is the author of 3 number one New York Times bestsellers, The Gifts of Imperfection, Daring Greatly, and Rising Strong. In this book, she unveils groundbreaking new research on 3 phases of overcoming struggle: the reckoning, the rumble, and the revolution. I love how you start the book saying, we've all fallen, and we have the skinned knees and bruised hearts to prove it. But scars are easier to talk about than they are to show, with all the remembered feelings laid bare. And rarely do we see wounds that are in the process of healing. Rising Strong, page 24. Yeah.
I think we've all fallen. I think we all have been hurt, disappointed, failure, heartbreak. The problem is, in our culture today, if you listen to a talk or if you listen to someone tell a story, they set it up and they say, then I fell, then I got hurt, then we failed. And then all of a sudden in 20 seconds, but then I fought my way back up. We got our act together. I fell in love with someone new. But no one stops at that moment where we're really hurt and down and says, what happens here? What happens in this moment? We look away when people try to show us, or sometimes people are too ashamed to show us. Mm-hmm. But for me, writing this book, I've spent this career saying, be yourself, be brave, be in the arena, show up. And then we started getting emails like, I went into the arena, I showed up, and now I got my heart broke.
Mm-hmm. I lost my job.
Yeah. And so I really felt like it was ethically imperative to talk about what does it look like to get back up. And what's so crazy for me about in our culture today is we look at things like failure and disappointment and heartbreak and think, man, I don't want to be those folks. Mm-hmm. But those are the brave people. Look, the brokenhearted are the bravest among us because they dared to love somebody.
Yeah. And there is a process. You've done the scientific research combined with the spiritual knowing, and you don't separate the two. You say, I don't believe faith and reason are natural enemies. I don't trust a theologian who dismisses the beauty of science. Ain't that the truth? Or a scientist who doesn't believe in the power of mystery. So how do you qualify, qualitative research and reconcile that with spirituality?
Because as a researcher, my job is to develop a theory based on the data that explains a phenomenon. And I do that by trying to understand people's lived experiences. And so if I'm sitting across from thousands of people interviewing them, and they're telling me about the importance of spirituality in their life, or faith, or mystery, or grace, then it's my job as a social scientist to make sure that I include that in whatever theory I develop or whatever explanation I put forward.
What I think is amazing is that one of the things that you've understood as a researcher, as a mother, as a daughter living in the world, is that we are all looking for the same thing. That's how also we're connected.
Absolutely.
And you say that is, you capsulize it as, we're all looking for a wholehearted life.
Yeah. To me, wholeheartedness is about being able to look at ourselves and to look at each other and say, I'm imperfect. I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. I'm vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't change the fact that I'm also brave and worthy of love and belonging and joy. Mm. That's what everyone's looking for. Everyone's looking for this sense of I'm enough, and my imperfection doesn't change that. Mm-hmm.
This is when I knew we were kindred spirits for real, because you included my favorite law, Newton's third law of motion here. I've always known that this law applies directly to our lives. It's just not some physical formula.
It's huge. And so the whole idea that for every action, there is an equal reaction.
Yep.
And so when something happens and it emotionally juices us up,
yes,
that doesn't just dissipate into the air. So right. For every time I feel hurt or feel ashamed or feel angry, I'm going to do something with that.
Yeah. or that energy is yes. creating its own thing yeah. already that's coming back.
Right.
That's why it may not show up, you know, immediately, but it just gets passed on to the next person.
Yeah. Yeah, there was like these very patterned ways that people offload hurt and emotion instead of feel it. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's anger and blame and avoidance. There's folks who push it down. I call it chandeliering. They push it down so far that they think they've got control of it. And then a seemingly innocent comment mm-hmm. or something happens and they just,
poof.
Yeah, yeah, straight up to the chandelier.
Yeah.
They go into a rage. And I mean, and if you've ever worked with someone like that or were raised by a parent like that, that's trauma inducing. That's eggshell environment.
Absolutely.
You know, and so for every action, there's a reaction. It's going to surface somewhere. The other thing that people do is they just stockpile it until their bodies say, I can't hold any more of this. I can't do it anymore.
And then their bodies turn on them.
Their bodies. I mean, because the body keeps score and it always wins.
Yep.
So it's, I can't sleep at night,
that's
depression, anxiety. Yeah. I mean, so.
The body keeps score and it always wins.
Yeah.
Because it's taking in everything all the time.
Right.
Nothing ever leaves. That's why you can dream about your fifth grade teacher and you're 55.
Right.
And put yourself right back in that classroom.
Right. Yeah. And it's the wisest part of us.
Yes.
Coming up, Rising Strong starts with getting curious about our emotions.
We're much better at inflicting pain than feeling and acknowledging pain.
And later, what's possible when we reach the revolution?
It has completely changed everything for me.
Super Soul Sunday. We'll be right back. Best-selling author Brené Brown has written a new book called Rising Strong: The Reckoning, The Rumble, The Revolution. During her research, she interviewed thousands of people from Fortune 500 leaders to long married couples and discovered there's one thing we all do when we're hurt or in pain.
So you say that this is probably one of your most personal books yet?
Yeah.
How is this the most personal?
Well, I see the progression of like the gifts of imperfection is be you. Daring greatly is be all in. And rising strong is fall, learn, get up, and do it again. And so it's the most personal book because as I was writing it, really the heart of this book is about these really dangerous stories we make up when we're in the midst of struggle, when we're in a fall. We are neurobiologically hardwired to make sense of that fall, to make sense of our hurt as fast as we can. And if we can come up with a story that makes sense of it, our brain chemically rewards us for that story, whether it's accurate or not. And so for me, what became very important is to write a book to help people understand when you fall, the stories you make up about your fall need to be really tested. And so as I was writing it, what I realized was that my stories of failure and heartbreak were the ones that gave me the most access to understanding what was happening behind the scenes in the story. Because we all do it. We all do it. I mean, if you and I finish this interview and we walk down the hill
yeah.
and I say, thanks a lot, Oprah, I really appreciate it. And you go like this. My brain takes yeah. that as anxiety or fear, and I immediately make up a story. I knew she never liked me. that Super Soul Sunday really sucked. I didn't do the right thing. It was terrible. And then all of a sudden, I'm working off a whole narrative. How I treat you the next time I see you is off that narrative.
Wow.
And then, you know, it just keeps going and going.
So how do we make sure that, or know that the story that we're telling ourselves is in alignment with what actually did happen? Yeah.
That's the rising strong process.
That's the rising strong process.
Right.
Yes.
So if we use that example of just you and I
yeah.
together. And so there's three pieces, the reckoning, the rumble, and the revolution. The reckoning has two easy, seemingly easy, but pretty difficult pieces. The first thing I have to do is when you look at me like that and I feel something in response to it,
yeah.
I have to A, acknowledge, woo, a button's been pushed.
Yeah.
I've been hooked on something emotionally is happening
yeah.
here. I'm
yeah,
responding.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I have to be willing to get curious about what it is. So instead of immediately going to my crazy story, I have to go to, okay, I'm emotionally hooked around something. I don't know what just happened, but I'm feeling like stressed out about it, or it hurt my feelings or something, and I need to figure out more. I mean, and
the reckoning is actually the recognition of it.
Reckoning. Yeah. Something emotional has happened.
Yeah.
But the big piece of the reckoning, and this is the part that really shocked me, is I'm willing to get curious and look into it.
Yeah.
Do you know how many people are not curious about emotion because that was just drilled out of us
growing up?
People are not curious about emotion. What's so crazy about curiosity when I was doing the research is, did you know that we're not curious about things that we don't know a little bit about? We have to know a little bit about something in order to even be curious about it.
Yes.
But people are not curious about emotion because most of us grew up, myself included, in families where we did not talk about feelings.
Of course not.
We heard one of these messages, whether that's vulnerability and weakness, or that won't do you any good.
Yep. No need to talking about it.
No.
Yeah.
People like us don't talk about stuff like that.
That's right.
Right. So it's a bigger step. The reckoning is a bigger step than you'd think, because you have to realize you're triggered and then get curious about it. And I'll tell you the other thing. We are much better at causing hurt than feeling hurt. We're much better at inflicting pain than feeling and acknowledging pain. So it could be more likely that if you gave me a look and when I said thank you, it's very possible that how that would happen is I get back, up to the house to get changed, and my phone rings and it's my daughter asking to go somewhere. I'm like, hey, just because you got your license doesn't mean that you get to drive around all the time. Yeah. You'll keep your butt at home today.
So then you then inflict whatever that is you're feeling on the next person.
Right.
Oh, it happens over and over and again all day long.
Right. We just offload pain instead of feel it. So I'm asking, like, this thing in the reckoning was to know, I'm emotionally hooked and I need to figure out what's going on. I mean, if you can get that far in this process, that is a big deal. That is a reckoning. That's a fierce reckoning. Mm. I know something's going on. I'm less likely to work it out on my employees or my kids or my friends.
Yeah. And the big thing is to recognize that when you're hooked, that it's your hook, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the other person.
Nothing. Nothing. And people didn't know they're hooked different ways. Like for me, I find myself in the pantry. Yeah. I usually forage for carbohydrates.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay, right.
It's, literally to make myself feel better.
Yeah. Literally to like push
down. Something. Yeah. 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 Yes.
And other people know they're hooked because they go into the loop in their head. They replay it over and over and over again 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
Some people know they're hooked because they want to punch somebody in the face or knock out a wall.
Mm-hmm.
So learning the signs of being hooked are really important.
And that's a part of the reckoning.
That's a part of the reckoning.
Got it.
Yeah. And then I'm curious. I want to, and it's that easy. Like, man, something is going on. I got to figure it out.
I mean, but this process of understanding that rising strong means you look directly to yourself for what was it about that?
Right.
That got me upset.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with the other person. It's what's going on with me.
No.
Why am I feeling so anxious? Yeah.
I tell you one thing that has been huge for me is that I have come to learn fully that my healing, whether it's a small altercation like this or a really big wound, mm-hmm. is not dependent on other people. I need to figure out why I'm hooked and I need to get curious about what's going on for me.
Up next, we're ready to rumble, getting to the truth about the lies we tell ourselves.
What we have to do in the rumble is we have to challenge those things. What do I really know for sure? What am I making up?
And later, in this week's Super Soul original short from Apricot Lane Farms, the remarkable rise of Poodle Roo, a down-on-his-luck rooster who found his calling. We'll be right back. Phase two of Brené's three-step process is the rumble. This is when we get honest with the stories we tell ourselves and take responsibility for our emotions.
Let's move right to the rumble.
So what's interesting is a lot of research, other researchers, kind of skip over that little, I call it the SFD. Am I allowed to say what it stands for?
Please do.
The shitty first draft.
Yeah.
From Anne Lamott.
Yeah.
Who says all good writers start with a shitty first draft, right? Mm-hmm. So that first story we make up, no one wants to stop and own that. We just want to get to fixing the problem. Oh my God, everything we need to know about who we are and what we need to work on lives in that SFD. So for me, the minute that you kind of blew me off as we were walking away was, I didn't do a good job on Super Soul Sunday. I knew she never liked me. She doesn't trust me. I'm really terrible in these situations. I need to not do things like this. I need to just go back to Houston and not do scary big things like this. I knew I screwed it up. That would be my first one.
Mm.
That's my story I'm telling
but
myself.
But doesn't every story, when you get to the last layer in the onion that you're peeling away of yourself, isn't the bottom layer always I'm not enough?
It is almost always I'm not enough.
Yeah.
But
and a lot of people turn that into, so who do you think you are?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a great shaming message. Yeah,
it's a shaming message.
But for me, so you've got this SFD. Now it's time to rumble, meaning now, and I loved it because someone said, why rumble? I'm like, because it's not a dance. It's harder than a dance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not a conversation. It's a rumble. It's a let's toss this thing around, poke mm-hmm. into it, turn it inside out, get really curious. So now I've got to start asking myself, what do I really know? You know, I think this is amazing. What do you call a story that has limited data points, limited factual data points that you fill in with your ideas and beliefs?
What?
A conspiracy.
Aye.
That's the definition of a conspiracy. Limited data points, and we fill in the rest with our values, beliefs, and ideas, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, right. So now I need to take this conspiracy, and I need to, the two things that you see a lot around these SFDs, conspiracies and confabulations.
That you're coming up with yourself about.
Right. And a confabulation, it's such a great word. We study it in social work school when we talk about brain injury and different things.
Yeah.
A confabulation is a lie told honestly. So if my husband texted me and said, hey, how'd everything go with Super Soul Sunday? And I said, Oprah totally blew me off. She thought I completely sucked at it. She's super frustrated with me. That's not true, right?
Right.
But it's a lie told honestly. And so those conspiracies.
I love that word, confabulation.
Isn't that a great word?
I love it.
So those conspiracies and those confabulations are dangerous. They're really dangerous.
And people are doing it to themselves all the time.
Oh, my God. I do this work with leaders all the time. And I ask leaders, how many of you today had a conversation or a discussion that kind of set you off a little bit, and within 30 seconds you had made up a story about someone? And every leader in the room raises their hand every time.
Wow, wow.
So what we have to do in the rumble is we have to challenge those things. What do I really know for sure? What am I making up?
Brené says there are three questions to ask yourself in the middle of the rumble. What more do I need to learn and understand about this situation? What more do I need to learn and understand about the other people in this story? And what more do I need to learn and understand about myself?
Rumbling is scary because it means staying brave and feeling our way through. What do I have to look at in this? What's really going on for me? Shame,
mm-hmm.
perfectionism,
mm-hmm.
trust. And so what I would do now is I would say, hey, do you have a sec? When we were walking away from the set after Super Soul Sunday, I said, thank you. And
you looked at me funny.
You looked at me really funny. And I made up that you were upset with me about something or something got screwed up.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if I could just get clear on it with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if I did that.
I just reiterate, this is a hypothetical situation. Because if you're just coming in the middle of this, you're like, ooh, Oprah blew off Brené.
They
are throwing down on the show. It's all hypothetical, people. We're just using it as an example.
Super hypothetical.
Super hypothetical. So, okay, continue.
Yeah, so, but let me ask you, if that hypothetical thing, which would never happen in a million years, happened, and I came to you and said, do you have a second? This is what happened, and here's what I'm making up about it.
Yeah.
Would you think I'm brave or weak for coming and clearing that with you?
I would think that was so brave. I would be like, wow. First of all, I would tell you, I'm so glad you mentioned this because I was thinking about my left foot and my knee was hurting and I didn't want to fall when I walked down that little hill. And so the reason why I was looking funny is because I like, here comes the hill. It had nothing to do with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So on Rumbling with Failure and Regret, you wrote, if there's one thing failure has taught me, it's the value of regret. How so?
I think I didn't want to believe this, but I have come to learn that regret is a fair but tough teacher. Regret, I think, is a function of empathy. And so when people say I have no regrets, I think that seems dangerous to me because do you not look back ever and say, if I had this to do over again,
I wish I
would have done another way.
Lord knows, yes.
Yeah, and you know what we regret the most? In the research, I asked people, what are those regrets? They're failures of kindness and failures of courage. I look back and I regret, oh man, I've never even talked about this before, but I was looking through some high school yearbooks and I saw where my girlfriends and I had like marked out people's faces and wrote names under it, slut or, you know, jerk or whatever. And I was like, I hope I didn't treat people like that. And if I did, oh my God, I regret it. God, I regret it. But I absolutely have regrets. And I don't think I'm done having them.
Next, get ready for the revolution.
It can revolutionize the way you live, the way you love, the way you lead, the way you parent.
Brené says it is life-changing. Super Soulers, do you have a rising strong story? I'll meet you on Facebook to hear it. We'll be right back.
So first we walk into the reckoning and then the rumble and then the revolution comes. The revolution.
Yeah. The revolution is simply when this process becomes practice.
I get it.
Just like anything else that's worthwhile, it has to become a practice.
Yes.
And so the revolution is turning things upside down so uncomfortably that you can't go back. We use it with our kids. We use it with each other. I use it with my team.
It's taking responsibility in the world for your own emotions and not allowing yourself to project your stuff and make it about somebody else ever.
Right. And let me tell you.
Because nobody's ever doing anything to you.
No. And the most dangerous stories we make up are the stories that we make up about our lovability, about our divinity, and about our creativity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the stories we make about our lovability, he left me, she had an affair. And then all of a sudden, we make up a story that says, I'm not lovable.
Yeah. Yeah, what you say is that it literally affects our inherent worthiness.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when you make up those stories, it's really all boils down to, I'm not enough.
I'm not enough.
I'm not enough, therefore not worthy. Yes.
Yeah. And so those crazy narratives that we make up, I think they shape who we are.
Don't we make them up to help us to actually avoid the truth?
You know what we make them up for? What? It's actually even more primitive than that.
What?
Survival.
Survival.
So our brain is wired above all else for survival.
Uh-huh.
So the minute we have a threat, whether it's a threat, anxiety, fear, shame, whatever that threat is, our brain says, give me a story. Our brain recognizes the pattern of a narrative, beginning, middle, end.
Yeah.
Give me a story that tells me who's safe, who's good, who's bad, who's dangerous.
Give me
a story. And so we make up that story and there's, you know, good guys, bad guys, we're wrong. You know, we're the victim. So it's really about trying to make sense of things very quickly. What our brain does not take into consideration is the need for discomfort and vulnerability in real relationship.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And so it's he or she who's willing to be the most uncomfortable can rise strong.
Whoa.
Yeah. Discomfort, the way home.
You say we got to lean into it.
Oh my God, like it sucks. It's terrible.
Oh, I'd rather have a bag of potato chips. Lord knows.
Rather
than leaning into discomfort, I'll do anything.
Lean back
from discomfort with a bag of chips.
Or a glass of red wine or six.
Yeah.
you know, or, you know, everything that we've got going on in the world today.
Yeah. And so leaning into it actually helps you eventually push through the number one, the reckoning, the rumble, and the leaning in is what actually causes the revolution.
It does, because it can revolutionize the way you live, the way you love, the way you lead, the way you parent. It has completely changed everything for me.
Well, that's what I got from the whole process here. Rising Strong is about rising strong into the fullness of who you were meant to be. And it means, you know, in essence, when I first started the Oprah Winfrey Show, I think one of the first things I said was about one of the reasons we wanted to do this show is so that you can see that you, number one, are not alone, and that you and only you can take responsibility for your life. This is about taking responsibility. And stop putting the blame on anybody or anything other than yourself. This says to me, more clearly than anything, that this whole world, everything, your encounters, your experiences, are mirrors of you. And it's showing up so that you can have the reckoning. It's showing up to get you to rumble. It's showing up to get you to move, to lead a revolutionary life. That's what I got from it. Is it?
Yeah.
That's what I got.
That's
sister,
it.
Rise and strong.
And welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. We are listening to Oprah and Dr. Brené Brown talk about the book Rising Strong, which is really just about how we transcend failure, how we overcome pain or loss or disappointment or wound, and how we can use that to turn our lives around. But the book is really about what we do in the middle, as I said before, what we do from the place where we fall until the time where we hopefully can turn it around. We know that we're all going to fail. We're all going to be in places of loss in our lives, and it's a very lonely place to be because we all experienced some version of pain or loss. And really, you know, you can sit with someone in their story and you can have had a similar experience, but you can't understand the unique experience of that person's pain ever, because we're all wired differently. We all come from different childhoods with different brain maps, with different ways of internalizing or externalizing our pain. And so I highly recommend Rising Strong. As I've said, it's my favorite book of all time about living your best life. It's so real. It's so raw. And I found it to be so true. Just to recap a little bit, what if you just sort of tuned in later, and you can also go back and check out this interview on YouTube with Oprah and Dr. Brené Brown about transcending failure and rising strong. But the reality is that when we fall down, we all have to sort of make up a story about what that's about in order to make sense of it. Now, our brains need to understand, why did that happen to me? What went wrong? What's going on in my life? And so we need to make a narrative or a story. And then that story begins to determine how we move forward or if we even do. But what we often do instead of understanding our stories and reckoning, rumbling, and really experiencing revolution is that we're not really taught how to do that. So we often blame other people for our failure or our wound. Or we justify or minimize, and we don't really know how to take responsibility or to look at our story and make sense of it in a way that isn't about shaming or blaming or, frankly, just avoiding and trying to just skip past it and moving on. One of the things I talk about is this idea that every action, this is over the Newton's sort of Newton's law idea, but that every action has a reaction. And so if I do something to you and offload my pain on you, you have to do something with it. Your body has taken it in, your senses, your mind, your soul in some way, whatever you want to call it, your sense of yourself. And you have to do something with that. Either you have to figure out what it's about offload it somewhere else, or you're going to sort of just stuff it inside. And it's really impactful because if every time I'm experiencing something negative from the world, from another person, and I don't deal with it, what I'm likely to do is either stuff it and let my body take the hit, which our bodies are going to take the hit anyway, and or I'm going to sort of find a way to offload it on you. And so that is just going to hurt someone else potentially. So if you grew up in an environment where there was a lot of this sort of like action reaction, you had a parent or maybe you have a partner who is frequently upset and unhappy or unpredictable that you live on eggshells with, this really does create the groundwork for trauma in your mind because you never know what you're going to get. And I see so many people that have grown up in these childhoods where they just didn't know what was going to happen next. And it's a very stressful and chaotic way to live. It's the same thing for PTSD, right? If let's say, for example, you're going to war and you never know each time you're on a shift what's going to happen, that is going to impact you for the rest of your life. This is why we do so much work with trauma, those of us who really love to work with trauma, because we know that it is not about the actual event as much as it's about also what people do with that, how they deal with it, what's the story, what's the narrative, what's the reaction. And a great resource, I think I discussed this book before, but it's a book called The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk, K-O-L-K-M-D. It's an incredible book. It's a bit difficult to read. The beginning talks a lot about childhood sexual trauma, but it's got some great information about what you can do to deal with trauma. And I'm not just talking about, you know, horrific trauma, but all kinds of trauma. We call big traumas and little traumas. So The Body Keeps the Score will help you understand. Maybe you don't tend to act out what you feel, but you don't feel well. Maybe you have, you know, fibromyalgia. Maybe you have other illnesses and diseases that can be exacerbated by stress or difficulty or even childhood trauma. We know that the more trauma you have in your childhood, the more likely you are to have long-term impacts in your physical and mental health. So don't believe me. There's a study called the ACEs. Look up the ACEs, A-C-E-S. It's an evaluation we use also for trauma. But it really will help you understand that it does play out in your life no matter what you do. But certain things can make it better. So the three big concepts of Rising Strong are that we have to face a reckoning. The first part is the reckoning. So this is where we are learning to recognize what just happened. Wow, that was really upsetting. Or something just happened in my body that I don't know that I know what that is, but it didn't feel good or it feels weird. And so we're trying to first acknowledge something just happened that didn't feel good or doesn't feel comfortable. And then we want to get curious about it. Wow, what is that? What is that about? You know, we are so much better at causing pain, as Brené says, than acknowledging pain. And then acknowledging it, but saying, okay, what is that about for me? So we first want to just get curious and acknowledge, why am I so anxious right now? Why do I feel so down after this conversation? Or why is this so hard for me? What is it bringing up for me? Not so much what does it say about the other person, but what is my hook? What is it bringing up for me? Do I find myself wanting to go work a lot now, work out a lot now, eat a lot now, not eat a lot now, use substances? What's happening? Because there's something there that's triggering me and affecting me. The next part is what Brené calls the rumble. And this is the really interesting part about what we're saying is, what do I know for sure about what just happened? And what am I making up? So here's where we are getting honest and trying to take responsibility. And she talks about the SFD, which I'm not going to explain the acronym there, but it's an Anne Lamott, who's a writer, a concept. It's that the first part of our draft is usually the worst part, right? That when you're a writer, you just need to put everything you can all out there at once, her ideas, and get it on the page. And that all good writing begins with terrible first effort. So it's the same thing here. We're just going to get it all out and just throw it all down on paper or in our minds, not filtering ourselves. What do I know for sure? What am I making up? What is this story? And in the interview with Brené, I think Oprah says it, and I fundamentally believe this, And this is why if you work with me, I'll probably almost always recommend Brené Brown if you want to do reading outside of therapy, is that it so often comes back to our core sense of ourselves not being enough, not being truly worthy, not being good enough, smart enough, talented enough, just not enough in some way. And I always say this, but I really believe that all of us struggle with worthiness. It's just a matter of how much. And so we want to look at what's coming up for me right now. What do I know? And the idea that she talks about is this concept called confabulation, which is this is when we are telling ourselves something that we believe is true or someone else, but it's really a lie. It's just the story we're telling, but we're telling it honestly. We believe it, but it's not necessarily true. So think about how dangerous that is. Your brain needs to have a story. You make one up and you begin spinning this narrative that either it's about the other person or it's something wrong with you, but you really don't, at your core, you haven't taken the time to see what it's about. So we want to challenge when you start to blame someone, challenge when you start to blame yourself. Try to just look at it and see what is really going on. What is this about for me? And what do I know for sure? The last part is about the rumble. And this is asking ourselves questions such as, what do I need to learn more about? Or what do I need to learn or understand more about others? And what do I need to learn or understand more about myself? So we're clarifying here. What is going on? Is this about my tendency to shame? Or about my need to be perfect and always get it right? Is this about the fact that I never trust anyone, and so I never let anyone in? And this is maybe more about my inability to trust. And so we're really trying to wrestle with understanding and clarifying what happened and where do I need to seek more information. And so I love the example that she gave. So if you have an interaction with someone that you initially want to walk away and make it about your failure or what you did wrong, you can stop and say, hey, can I just take a minute with you and clarify that comment you just made or that statement you just said or that email? You know, is this what you're saying? Because oftentimes it's not. People are just expressing themselves or writing something without thinking. And we're taking that little nugget of negativity and applying it in a massive way to what it says about us. And so we really just want to try to understand that so we can get to the revolution. And this is where the process of all we've been doing about trying to reckon and understand and acknowledge becomes a practice of taking responsibility for our own emotions rather than making it about someone else, which is what we all do. I do this. You do this. This is not something that I don't think any of us are not susceptible to doing. And so we want to take those dangerous stories and begin to examine them, question them, explore them, and try to understand them. And the three things, the three stories I think we make the most up about, and Brené talks about this in Rising Strong, is these dangerous stories or these issues of negativity or worthiness end up coming back to us not being lovable. They're about our lovability. They're about our divinity. They're about our creativity, questioning that, not believing in our deeply inherent worthiness as human beings. And so we're just making stories up, but they're coming back at the core to these fundamental ways we see ourselves because we're just trying to make sense of our pain. But the only way to take something in your life that has been something that you regret, something that you feel that you failed at, or something that's hurting in your life is to lean in and get uncomfortable with what it feels like, leaning into your vulnerability rather than numbing it or checking out or avoiding it. It's going to come up. I always say, you know, grief or pain or loss or failure, it will sit on your shoulder like a little bird and wait your entire life for you to deal with it. It doesn't just fly away on its own. You have to lean in and figure out what's going on so that you can live and love and parent and partner in a way in your life that is an evolution of growth and that makes you feel better about yourself than worse. Because every day and every experience and every interaction, we're going to face difficulty. I say this all the time, but I mean, I say it to myself. Life is hard and it is never going to stop being hard. Hopefully you have periods where it's less hard, but everyone I know is struggling with some part of their story, whether it's a story that was in their past or a story that they're dealing with now, that the only way to wrestle with those stories and reckon and rumble and revolutionize them is to lean in so that you can truly be all that you were meant to be. So you've been listening to Moody with Dr. Sage, where we just explore our moods, our minds, and our real lives every week, live at 8 a.m. on Sunday morning. I hope that today you will take a minute to ask yourself where in your life, where in your stories, where in your emotions can you get curious? Can you acknowledge? Can you go deeper? Can you lean in to the uncomfortableness? It's not going to necessarily feel good, but it will in the long run. It's sort of like exercising or developing a muscle. It's hard to lean in, but the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And it will be powerfully impacted in all areas of your life if you can do it. So on that note, I hope you have a beautiful Sunday. As we head into the holiday, I wish you a time of grace and compassion and well-being. And if you don't have those things, I hope you will reach out and get support. Remember that everything we talk about on the show is really just meant to serve for informational purposes only, but that if this time of year is a hard time for you, the holidays are really hard. It's hard to lean in. If you need help, if you are suffering, please reach out and find mental health support and seek the support that you deserve and that you need, and know that you are worthy.